You are listening live to the program.
Brought to you by Worth Harley-Davidson North, I-29 in Tiffany Springs. Why the hell not? You're worth it.
Your teams, your town, your program.
That first game, that first 10, 15, 20 minutes is going to be interesting to see because, you know, you could have guys come out and just go crazy because they're so excited to play another team. They also got to be careful from a physical perspective how much energy they're going to lose in that, you know, first 10, 20 minutes.
In terms of where we're at, considering everything that's gone on, I think we're in a really good spot. I would like to think that we're much farther along than some of the other teams, but I don't know that. Until we get down there and see for ourselves, we have no idea how it's going to play out. And I'll take
And now, on a very special program, bidding farewell to an all-time great, Soren Petro.
Right you are, Kay. Right you are. Petro on the program on Sports Radio 810 WHB. No, I'm not leaving. No, we're not saying goodbye to Jed, and I know you figured out Curtis is not an all-time great.
Well done.
You like that? You like that? That's... Those.
Polite golf applause. Well done.
Yeah, you had a nice, thoughtful throw, so why wouldn't I make it insulting right out of the blocks? No, yeah. It's last day for intern Rushmore. We are very sad. She was dubbed Rushmore because of how good of an intern she was right out of the gates, day one. And, of course, always leave them wanting more. She's jetting. At the beginning of July, and what a great plan. There's no way you weren't around long enough to really ever actually annoy anybody. What a great strategy on your part.
Yeah, I definitely took that into account when I was trying to figure out how long I was going to be here for. I'm like, I didn't want to stay too long, overstay that welcome.
She thought, how long is it usually before I begin to annoy people? And then she went, I'll back it off a week, and that's when I'll leave.
Precisely.
Now, we are going to miss you, no doubt. You have been a pleasure to work with and a tremendous asset, and so we'll go back to just being three dopes the moment you leave.
In a time where it's finding stories and things to talk about has been more important than it ever has been for us, your ability to always be looking for the next thing, always finding stuff, keeping us up to date was greatly appreciated. So here.
I think Rushmore, you might have been the only intern that when we're like, hey, come with like three stories, who actually came each day with three stories.
Or five.
Three topics.
Or six.
I'm sorry, we've covered that
yeah,
many times.
Topics
between
and stories.
A story and a topic. Three topics. You always came with topics, and that is greatly appreciated. And that is a big part of what set you apart. That and you were willing to go get Jed lunch all the time.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I don't know what we're going to do for topics from now on.
No. No.
Well, lucky for you guys, I do have a phone, so, you know. I'm always available to tweet, text, call, you know.
Okay. That's good.
Excellent.
Communication is certainly of the utmost. Well, we hope you will come back. You know, you'll get to some cooler weather for sure when you get up to Maine. I know my time in upstate New York for college, the summers are the best time, man. It's absolutely fantastic up there in the summer. So you'll at least get beautiful weather, if nothing else.
Also, when are we getting Husson gear?
Well, I'm trying to figure out how to say this without sounding like a total jerk. I usually wear a small and didn't think to pack some larger sizes with me. So once I get back up there, expect a package.
Hell yeah.
Soon after.
Do they have like the kind of a skinny fat size for Jed, regular fat guy size for me, and then circus tent for Curtis?
I'm what they call five medium, 5M.
I've written down those exact sizes. I'll make sure that I get the correct order out.
That would be great. That would yeah. be great. And make sure you send the bill to Curtis Siebel. That's 12465. Yeah.
Fat guy lane.
Yeah. the Tubby Estates.
East Olathe, Kansas.
Yeah. Apartment 1C, because he's not going up a flight of stairs.
Hell no.
That is not
four apartments, happening. Not one stair has been climbed.
Definitely a 100-level apartment number for Curtis. There's no 220, no 320, no. No.
I have friends live on like the third floor. I'm like,
it's maybe, nice knowing you.
Maybe yeah, we weren't that my close place. Anyways.
Hey, man, come over here. No, I'll come on over here.
Not climbing those steps. No. I will say that one thing I have noticed is, like, when you basically sit at home all the time, like, I had to go up to the office the other night to pick something up, and you'd have thought I was driving, like, to Columbia. I was like, I put it off and put it off and put it off. And I love how close I am to the office normally. And I was just like, oh, my God, I got to go into the office. Oh. You thought I was having to run down to Columbia, Missouri or something.
There's, what, five stoplights I might have to sit through.
At the stoplight. Like, I don't have patience for the stoplights as it is. I was like, you know, I could be literally just sitting. I could be sitting at home right now.
And there is no way to get here from anywhere without sitting through at least three stoplights.
Oh, God, no.
Even if you're in the parking lot.
Now, anyone who's familiar with the 119th and Metcalf area, they've conveniently, like, they made parallel streets that have to share stoplights. Tell me the Einstein who was in charge of that plan.
Yeah, I know. I saw someone do that. They didn't realize they could have just gone straight up Metcalf and merged. They actually turned left on the 119th and then turned right again on Blue Parkway. I'm like, you're not from here, are you? Anyone who lives out here knows exactly what I'm talking about.
Yes.
You now have to sit through two more stoplights just for being stupid. Not from here.
Speaking of being stupid, we're back to Curtis again.
Back to me again.
I couldn't.
Dude, the ball was right there on the net. You had to spike it.
I couldn't resist.
That's a moral imperative in comedy, huh? the comedian in me is like, I hope he says that. Oh, he did. Yes.
It's a callback is what it is, folks. It's called a callback. Usually you wait for later in the show, but I couldn't resist. Rob Manfred was actually who inspired me to say,
speaking of stupid.
We're going to hear some comments that he made. We'll talk about that with Jeff Passan. He's coming up in the 5 o'clock hour, brought to you by Corona Hard Seltzer. You can stock up on that for your 4th of July weekend. Zero carbs, zero sugars, only 90 calories, four great flavors for you. Ultimate summer drink for adult beverages. Get it today wherever you buy your Coronas. But we'll talk about baseball with Jeff Passan coming up in the 5 o'clock hour. With all of us being off tomorrow for the 4th, we've juggled some things around. So you're welcome, Kansas City. We'll unleash Danny Klingscale on you today in the 4 o'clock hour. A little segment we brainstormed for about 30 seconds and came up with the idea of calling Danny Unleashed, brought to you by our friends at Easton Roofing. Coming up in our next hour, your chance to win great Cajun food from Jazz, a Louisiana kitchen. We'll play Stump the Chumps. Peter Yates Enoch will join us. Todd LeBeau will join us. Probably the third segment there, I'll bet you LeBeau is like in his car driving home. he'll switch to the phone. I don't think there's any chance Lebo's going till 6 tonight, is he?
Probably not.
Is he working tomorrow?
No.
I don't think so.
Okay. No chance. In fact, I'll put him down as a maybe for 3 o'clock. But Peter Yates Enoch, he'll warrior up. He'll be ready to rock and roll. Great Cajun food from Jazz. We'll give you a shot at that coming up in the 3 o'clock hour. Later this hour, Jesse Newell joins us from the Kansas City Star to talk Kansas Jayhawks as they're now going in front of the committee. What does that mean? What should the expectations be with the news that the Kansas Jayhawks are going in front of a committee? That's what they've wanted. Careful what you wish for sometimes, or no, this is great news. We'll see what the man who covers the Jayhawks thinks and what he is hearing from folks in and around the program that this will mean for the Kansas basketball team. I want to start with the comments, though, that were made last night on Scott Van Pelt. I don't know. I've had a busy day. I've had some Zooms. Also tried to bring you some of Peter Vermees' Zoom call. He and Matt Beisler met with the media today as they're getting ready to head down to the bubble. By the way, did you see FC Dallas now total positive tests 10? 10. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. 10. Had zero when they left. Either, like, you know, like, how, like, if that isn't an advertisement against flying, sorry, airlines.
Yep.
But they supposedly had zero. Everyone who got on that plane had tested negative. And they get off the plane, and a couple days later, they got like four right away, a couple more after that, and now four more. They're at 10 positive tests.
Wow.
Okay. Okay, we'll see how this goes. I am still optimistic. But anyway, we'll hear from Peter Vermees a little bit later on. But no, I want to start with, I guess my point was, a lot of different things going on today, so I haven't had a chance to hear a lot of the station. I don't know if anybody played this. I don't think so. When I was listening to the Border Patrol, no one did. Okay, when I was listening to the Border Patrol in the Zone, I didn't hear this. I want to play the comments of Bill Barnwell. If you're familiar with Bill Barnwell, and I should have brought his bio up. Didn't he used to be with Football Outsiders? Wasn't that where he got his?
Be.
Or am I getting him confused?
I know he was at the Ringer for a while, but I don't remember if Football Outsiders is where he got to start.
Really? Okay. Well, maybe it's maybe I've got it all wrong. He's in runner, blah 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 blah. Da, 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 da. Man, yeah. So you can all take a flying Nathan's hot dog bite out of my rear end.
Nice work.
Prior to Grantland, Barnwell worked as the managing editor for Football Outsiders.
There you go.
So there you go. A quantitative think tank while contributing articles to ESPN. So there you go. All right. So anyway. Bill Barnwell was on Scott Van Pelt last night, and he was discussing the subject of Chris Jones with Scott Van Pelt. I think we hear a little bit of Van Pelt in this, right? A little bit of back and forth.
Yes.
That's how we cut it, right? Okay, good. This is Barnwell when asked if he thinks the Chiefs should give Jones the contract that he wants.
It's tough because this is a guy who I thought was the Super Bowl MVP. He was that impactful in that second half comeback. For Chris Jones, you look at the numbers, he does not actually stand out as a really significant defender. Look at the Chiefs defense when Chris Jones is on the field and Chris Jones is off the field. They have a better sack rate and a better pressure rate when Chris Jones is off the field, which doesn't really seem to make a lot of sense.
No.
Look at the running game. They average 5.3 yards per carry allowed when Chris Jones is on the football field. 4.3 yards per carry allowed when he's off the field. Teams do target him in the running game because he's someone who tries to get pressure at the quarterback, even if it means maybe losing a gap responsibility here or there. I think Chris Jones is a very talented football player. I think he can be a difference maker. But when you have Mahomes, when you have Tyreek Hill, when you have all these players who want significant sums of money, can you really afford to pay Chris Jones $20 million a year? I don't think the Chiefs can.
And these are the fascinating questions that come in the modern NFL when you win, right? I mean, and no one's saying you wouldn't want to win, but I mean, God, it becomes challenging to win long-term to pay all the people. That's what's fascinating to me about the Cowboys. You know what I mean? Like how, and they haven't won yet, but like, how do you make the money work to keep yourself flexible to have the ancillary players that win you championships? You know what I mean?
I know. You know what though, Scott? If you have Patrick Mahomes or Dak Prescott, those are good problems to have. Like, I'd rather have to worry about finding a defensive tackle than finding the next Patrick Mahomes. So I don't feel too much sympathy for the Chiefs.
Gee, where have I heard that before?
I don't know. Maybe
for
somewhere.
The second straight day, I'm thinking, that sounds familiar. I'm getting used to hearing things being said that nationally that you said 2 months ago.
Yeah. Yeah, there you have it. Look, and I'll tell you, Curtis, I got your text, FYI.
Okay.
Listen, I bring that up to support what I've said. Yeah, maybe, I don't know. I bring it up just because I'll bring up what everybody says and give everybody the information, and then it's up for everyone to make their own decision as to what the Chiefs should or shouldn't do as a fan, right? If that's part of your fandom is wanting to comb through their decisions and debate and discuss with your friends what they did was right or wrong. I love doing that. So I assume there are others out there that are like me. Ultimately, Brett Veach is the guy who's paid to be the get it right guy, right? He's in the get it right business. But Bill Barnwell is a guy that's been around covering football, dissecting football, studying football for a long, long time. Bill Barnwell, what I like about that was you hear him initially say, singing the praises of Chris Jones, mm-hmm. and rightfully so. How many times have we talked, have people said, he batted down those passes. Chiefs don't win the Super Bowl without Chris Jones. Bill Barnwell's got your back. He says, I thought he was the MVP of the game. What they did in that second half, what he did in that second half, they don't win without him. Barnwell is a huge fan, right? And then he gets into the numbers, the research, and the study of it, and he says, well, but wait a minute. They give up a yard per carry more running the ball with Chris Jones gone, or with Chris Jones on the field, as opposed to off. 5.3 yards per carry when he's on the field, 4.3 when he's off. And, oh, wait a minute, they have better pass rush numbers without Chris Jones than with him. Now, I'm a guy that doesn't like to just go find some numbers that support my cause and then just give you part of the story and just to be like, look, see, I'm right. I don't do that. I want to give you the whole story here. And if Bill Barnwell had more time, you know, SportsCenter is a quick hitter. It's a 30,000-foot view, right? It's 100 miles wide and an inch deep. That's what they give you. We tend to be more, I'm not going to say an inch wide and 100 miles deep, but we're more like 10 miles wide and 10 feet deep in what we do here. I think, you know, Barnwell would come to the same conclusion that I do. Those numbers I wouldn't hold as an exact representation of Chris Jones' play, because I think part of it is, well, they average 5.3 yards per play when he's on the field. Well, I think they spell him. We've already talked about how 175 more snaps Aaron Donald played last year over Chris Jones. And that's not just because he missed a game in there. Chris Jones doesn't play all the snaps. The Chiefs have always used him as part of a rotation. And in some ways, that's just really smart, right? In other ways, he's just not Aaron Donald. And Aaron Donald's an absolute freak, which is another reason why you shouldn't pay him Aaron Donald money. But anyway, my point to this is I think you're going to spell him in rundowns. And when you do, the guys that you put in there are run-stopping specialists. So their run numbers are going to look pretty good, right? Where Chris Jones comes in, if he's in there, I do think they target him and they run right at him. But I also think he's in there to rush the passer, and you probably get a lot of draws on third and 15s. That go for 7 or 8 yards where they're really just like, well, maybe we'll pop one here. But if not, let's punt it out of there and try to play some field position. And so, you know, just like if you look at all third down backs, right, like old school third down backs where they literally just came in, Dave Meggetts and Todd McNair's.
Todd McNair, yeah, he's the most
yeah,
obvious.
Those type of guys, their yards per carry were always really good because they got it on third and 12 and they went for seven. They still
draw
punted,
yeah.
But their yards per carry, you know, were a little bit inflated. They were a little bit bloated. And I think there's a little bit of that in those rundowns. We know Chris Jones was significantly better against the run last year than ever before. He really stepped that part of his game up. So, you know, these are career numbers. I don't think that's a true snapshot of Chris Jones and his ability against the run today as we sit here. But the better pass rush rate with him off the field versus on. Now, again, that may be because they're throwing the ball in, you know, when he's off the field, they're throwing the ball in a short yardage, you know, scenario, and so they I don't know, there could be any number of things that are just kind of quirks amongst the numbers, but it's definitely not a good thing. It's not a selling point that the Katz brothers are laying out to Brett Beach in an effort to get him an Aaron Donald contract. These words are not coming out of their mouths. Right, this is not compelling evidence to give Chris Jones money. All right, and it's not a guy who's for or against Chris Jones, who's for or against the Kansas City Chiefs. It's a guy who covers the National Football League as a whole, and his conclusion is, wow, where the eye test says, man, I got to pay this guy because he may have been the single biggest reason why the Chiefs won the Super Bowl. His long haul numbers say, this is a guy that you can clearly live without.
And that's that last part is the important part, because it'd be easy for someone to say, well, are you saying those numbers suggest that the Chiefs defense is better without Chris Jones? Maybe not. But at the very least, they suggest that he isn't the difference between winning and losing to the point where you'd need to pay the kind of money he's demanding.
Yes, and that's where I've been all along. Are the Chiefs a better player with Chris Jones than without? Yes, they're are they a better team with Chris Jones than out? Yes, they're absolutely a better team, but it's the price of the salary cap. Listen, I'm going to tell you, let me give you another thing that we're going to look over the horizon in a conversation that we're going to have on this program, should we have sports and should sports radio survive these difficult economic times, a conversation that we will have in, I would say, 2022. It's going to be the conversation of Patrick Mahomes and how much of the cap he takes up. Because if you want to just say $40 million, take $35 million off last year's team and show me a champion. Find the $35 million. And it's not even Chris Jones that you'll cut, because he only counted about two. Right? If you have to lose $35 million, if you take Tyreek Hill, Travis Kelce, I think we're still, what, about $12 million away? And Tyrann Mathieu off this team. Did they win the Super Bowl last year?
No.
All right, so that's the riddle that's got to be figured out. But that riddle is no different than figuring out the riddle with Chris Jones. Take $18 million off this team from last year. Where do you want to get it? And tell me if you've still got a Super Bowl champion. Oh, and by the way, when you take the 18 off for the difference between what Chris Jones is asking for and what he got last year, he's really asking where it's more like 19 or 20 million more. Take 20 million off this team last year. Just go to last year's cap. You can find it on Over the Cap or Spotrac, and deduct $20 million worth of salary and tell me how they win. You can't do it. Now, let me ask you this. Are they going to pay Patrick Mahomes? You bet your ass they're going to pay Patrick Mahomes. Hell yes, they're going to pay Patrick Mahomes. So you're going to have to find that $35 million. Brett Beach and Andy Reid are going to have to be $35 million better once Patrick Mahomes gets to $40 million a year. And if the cap goes up, which it may or may not now with COVID, but let's assume at some point it's going to under that contract, let's make it $25 million you got to find. Okay, $10 million worth of cap's gone up. $20 million worth of cap has gone up. You're still going to have to find a lot of money, but then compound it with the money you got to find on Chris Jones. Bill Barnwell said it best at the end. I'm not real worried about going out and finding another defensive tackle. You pay the quarterback whatever it takes. We'll take your phone calls next, 913-3810-810. You're in the program.
The Program with Soren Petro.
If you're in the car and saying, I don't know what the hell you're talking about, and this is terrible radio, I agree.
Weekdays from 2 to 6 on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
You're in the program here on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Soren Petro with you. Thanks for joining us here on July 2nd. As we get ready for a three-day weekend. I know a lot of people got tomorrow off, so have yourself a great 4th of July weekend. News out there, Mike Florio, stunningly, has got something wrong. He quotes Terry Lefton in the Sports Business Journal as reporting that the defending champs, the Chiefs, are closing in on a deal to sell field naming rights to Government Employees Health Association, GEHA. As we know, has become a big sponsor. The Chiefs had an announcement about it a year or so ago. He says it has an existing sponsorship deal with the team and with Patrick Mahomes. Its corporate headquarters are in the vicinity of Arrowhead Stadium. Presumably the official title will be something like GEHA Field at Arrowhead Stadium. That has prompted the Chiefs to send out a statement where they say, we've enjoyed our partnership with GEHA. There are certainly a lot of directions that that may go. We've talked openly about a desire to find the correct field naming rights partner for Arrowhead Stadium for a number of years. And while field naming rights have always been an option to explore with GEHA, and as you'll recall, when that thing happened, I said that this is one of the levels it could go to, is field naming rights. That's something we reported at that time. So this would seem like a natural, right? That's what we were hearing when this partnership was at least announced. You're looking for field naming rights as part of a strategic growth and expansion of this relationship. There has never been, nor will there be, a field naming rights deal in place for the 2020 season. We feel that this message was clearly communicated, but unfortunately, a misleading and factually incorrect headline has been written. Amidst all that is currently happening in our communities, neither the Chiefs nor GEHA are focused on a potential field naming rights deal at this time. Our partnership with GEHA remains very strong. It exceeded our expectations in the first year, and we look forward to an exciting future together. Is this something that they're going to do next year? Is it something that was going to happen this year? They're moving back to next year because of the pandemic and COVID? Who knows? But obviously, the information that's being out there is being reported. The Chiefs are saying is not correct. So if you saw that story, It might happen. It's something we talked about last year, that is an element of how this relationship could expand. But the Chiefs say it is not happening in 2020. I do think it's significant that they say it's not happening in 2020. They're very much making it clear that it's something that could happen in the future. 913-810-810. Let's go to the phones. Jonathan, waiting patiently. You're in the program, Jonathan. What's going on?
Hey, Saran, I just had a question and then a statement and another question.
Okay.
With all the COVID going on, no one knows how many fans are going to be at games, right? So you don't have no idea what revenues are going to be. So then you have no idea what the salary cap's going to be. So how do you do a contract like, you know, Mahomes or even or Chris Jones or someone like that when you have no idea what the cap's going to be? And the follow-up question is something that might make sense is doing Mahomes as a percentage of the salary cap. And so my question is, has that ever been done before?
Okay. Let's start with the percentage. No, it has not been done before. It's been lobbied about by a number of people. Sounds good in theory, right? Well, he just always gets 15% of the cap. That defeats the purpose of doing a multi-year deal for a team. Teams wouldn't want it because they like that on the back end of those deals. They finally get to where the player becomes much more affordable and they gain some cap space. They pay for it early. They get the benefit later on, depending upon how much, or they backload it and it ends up counting the same percentage throughout. If you do the same percentage,
yeah.
The Chiefs couldn't even do that. Right. And one of the reasons they wouldn't do it is because then you have no cost certainty. Right. So you're adding contracts. And particularly now what you see is the worst case scenario. You just mentioned we don't know what the cap's going to be. And that's the reason why Patrick Mahomes would never do it, particularly now that we've seen that, no, there is a distinct possibility that revenue can be lost in the NFL and the cap might go down. So why would Patrick Mahomes, who plays the one position that can get the large percentage of the contract guaranteed, why would he give up that guaranteed money? It sounds good in theory, but for a multitude of reasons, it will not happen. And it definitely won't happen with Patrick Mahomes. All right, and if I'm wrong, I will admit to being wrong. I do not see the scenario where he would give up cost certainty. He's going to get a massive deal, and he's going to probably – I think what you might see, if Patrick Mahomes sets the bar or sets a trend with a new kind of contract, it'll be a five-year 100% guaranteed deal, six-year 100% guaranteed. What it's ultimately going to be, assuming it gets done before this year, which I think it will, it's going to be a four-year extension. And with a big signing bonus. And I think what might happen is 100% of it be guaranteed. That's what I think might happen, but it won't be a percentage. And to your point about Mahomes and Jones and how can you negotiate the deal, you can't. It's impossible to negotiate either one of those deals and have any kind of certainty for what is going to be left over next year, the year after, and the year after. With the kind of revenue loss that the NFL is looking at taking, if they indeed are going to play without fans, rule of thumb, and we had this conversation last week with the Sports Business Journal, and I forget who was it? Ben Fisher. He said, rule of thumb, one-third of NFL revenue comes from local revenues. So tickets and concessions and all of that. So you can look at it. Listen, in stadium sponsorships, they're not getting paid for those, right? So pretty much all your local revenue will be gone. For the Chiefs, for the average NFL team, that'll mean a one-third hit. Right? For the Chiefs, that'll probably be more like 25%. The smaller market teams have less of their revenue that come from that. But they also have less local revenue, which also tends to mean that they need it that much more. But so they can't. It's impossible to do any of those contracts with any kind of certainty. So I would ask you, if you're going to do contracts, which one would you do? If you know you're putting yourself in a precarious situation and you know that there are going to be ramifications, which one are you going to do?
Oh, you can't do both. It's obvious.
And that's why, to me, the conclusion I've reached is that the Kansas City Chiefs should – one of the reasons why you may very well be hearing that there's been no conversations, no offers made, the Chiefs should not make an offer. There should be no offer on the table to Chris Jones, and they should be right. Telling him, listen, it sucks. It sucks for us. We're going to lose a third or a quarter of our revenue here. And it sucks for you because we're not even offering you a long-term deal, and we have the franchise tag. We're going to pay you the average salary of the top five players at your position, which Pro Football Focus says you're the seventh best at your position. But we're going to pay you like a top five guy. right in the middle of all those top five contracts, and we're going to do it for 1 year, and we'll see where we are next year. And if you want to sit out, God bless you. We wish you the best. Yeah. That's what I think the Chiefs should do. That's what would be smart. If you have a contract that you think can get done, that's smart. But I don't think there's anything that he would even remotely consider that the Chiefs should be offering, because they have to pay the quarterback.
Right. They have to pay him. And I'm wondering, here's what I wonder. So what happens if you do, say, like 4 years, $40 million, and then the cap goes down like 30% or 35%? I mean, you're putting yourself in a really tough space.
Yeah, you cut Tyrann Mathieu next year when his number goes to $19.7 million. And you cut probably
Frank Clark?
No, Frank Clark is more to cut than keep even next year. Frank Clark's not going anywhere. You couldn't even begin to cut him until 22. You know, you might be looking at Eric Fisher probably. I mean, you know, I hear people say, well, you cut Duvernay-Tardif, you cut Sammy Watkins. They're not even on the roster. They're not even. They're at $176 million right now, and neither one of those guys are signed next year. Yeah. You know, I had that conversation, and I said, "Well, yeah, they got $176 million on a $200 committed this year, committed next year, with the cap number this year being $200 million. If they back it up $30 million down to $170 million, you basically have two wideouts, Mecole Hardman and Tyreek Hill. You have two running backs, Darwin Thompson and Clyde Edwards-Helaire, who technically is not even signed right now. You have no guard, no center, no guard. At least your starting guard, center, guard are gone. You've got all these guys you've got to replace, and you're already $6 million over the cap. So, listen, you have to do Mahomes, because it doesn't matter what other kind of – and I appreciate the call. Thank you very much. It's a really good question, Jonathan. I don't care what other collateral damage comes with signing Mahomes. You deal with that. But the collateral damage of signing Chris Jones cannot be pissing off Patrick Mahomes. The industry standard is set last year with Carson Wentz and Jared Goff, that when you go into your fourth year, you get a four-year extension and you get upwards of $100+ million in guaranteed money. It was $109 million for Jared Goff. My expectation is that you'll get at least $125 million guaranteed for Patrick Mahomes. My expectation is that it'll be $40 million per year, $160 million extension on the back end of the $6 million he's going to get this year, the $25 million he's going to get next year. And you're going to give him a signing bonus in the $50, $60 million range. That'll be prorated out over the course of the 6 years. That's what I expect to happen, and I expect it to happen before they kick off on September 10th. Praying that they kick off on September 10th. We'll take a break. Jesse Newell next here in the program.
The Program with Soren Petro.
His dream is to crush your dream. His contribution is to destroy your contribution.
Weekdays from 2 to 6 on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
You're in the program here on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Thanks for joining us as we get ready to celebrate our nation's birth. Happy birthday, America, coming up on Saturday. I hope everyone's got a good weekend plan and gets a chance to relax and unwind a little bit. Kansas got what they have felt, I believe, was good news. They are going to go in front of the new committee, the new independent committee, independent panel that will determine their fate with the NCAA investigation. A man who's been covering this from the beginning and has done a great job is Jesse Newell for the Kansas City Star. Jesse joins us here on our Sprint guest line to talk about this subject. He's brought to you by our friends at Hen House, where you can get stocked up with everything you need for the holiday weekend. Just go by your neighborhood Hen House. In fact, my wife was at the Hen House earlier today. Always great specials. We're going to do some burgers this weekend. She took advantage of the 93% lean ground beef, just $3.99 a pound. How about some ribs? All natural, sold in Cryovac, just $3.99 a pound. They got everything you need. Don't forget the Tippins pies to finish off your 4th of July meal. Cherry, apple, blueberry pies, just $9.99 only. The Tippins pies only at your neighborhood Hen House. Jesse, welcome to the Sprint guest line. How are you, my friend?
Doing all right, Soren. How about yourself?
Doing very good. Doing very good. This is what Kansas has wanted, right? They wanted to go in front of this independent committee. You no doubt have talked to a lot of folks. Is this a careful what you wish for situation, or does this give them the best chance of either the most lenient punishment or perhaps no punishment?
Well, it gives them the best chance. I don't know what the chance is to be better off, but I just think for Kansas, yeah, it's an unknown at this point. This independent panel has not happened yet. They haven't had cases go through it. Obviously, it's decided now by mostly or all NCAA outsiders rather than people under the NCAA umbrella. You're talking about mostly people in the legal profession deciding the case and ruling on it, as opposed to, you know, people who are sports athletic program presidents and people of that nature. So, yeah, I think for Kansas, I mean, we saw the letter that they sent back to the NCAA a few weeks back that they made public, basically said that was the route that they felt was best. And I don't know that either one of them, you know, is likely going to end up with Kansas getting no punishment or getting off, you know, completely out of this thing. But, yeah, I think that this was the better option. And you only have to look back about a week ago to the Oklahoma State thing. You know, this is what's happened in recent times when if the NCAA gives you allegations of violations and you cooperate and you say, yes, let's go over this, let's do this, and then it feels like most of those schools still continue to get hammered hard, this process is just different. I mean, the NCAA and Kansas have disagreed on a lot of different things and been kind of adversarial throughout every step of this process. So this new independent board is going to kind of be the jury instead of the old committee on infractions, as this thing would happen in previous years, where a lot of the times the judge and the jury were kind of the same people. So, yeah, I think this is more favorable for Kansas. That's exactly what they said in that letter they sent to the NCAA a few weeks ago. But is it a guarantee of anything for KU? I don't think so. It's just the preferred option based off of the two options that were available.
Most people, when they walk into a building for the first time, when they walk out onto a bridge for the first time, they don't go walking out like George Jefferson. Sorry for the young people out there, and Jesse, you might be one of them to not get that, but the George Jefferson walk where he just struts out there confident, arms waving side to side behind him and chest puffed out, you know, you go with a little bit of caution. My point here is that's how I would expect this committee to operate. They're not going to come storming into it. They're going to operate cautiously. They're going to operate within the parameters of what you know. You just mentioned the legal community. So that, to me, means they'll be looking for precedent. And this is a case that has no precedent. So they're going to know that they are going to be setting the precedent. I think from that standpoint, it could be bad news for Kansas. From the standpoint that I don't think they're going to look at it and go, okay, we've got the NCAA who's clearly coming hard at them, and we're going to come to the conclusion to give them nothing. So from that standpoint, I feel like the committee is going to look around for the only precedent they can find, and they're going to say, okay, we've got to give them something. However, you mentioned the legal background means to me that they are going to be looking at this more like a case that would go in front of a jury or in front of a judge. They're going to be looking for hard facts, right? And I still have yet to see the hard fact that says Kansas sit green-lighted paying players. And from that standpoint, I think it's going to bode well for them. So I don't think they'll get off scot-free like they might have if a panel was looking at their 20th case. But I also don't think that they're going to get hit near as hard because they're not going to connect any dots. The NCAA might look at something and say, we've been around the block a few times. We know how this works. And we know this dot connects with this one. We don't see the line. We can't make the line. But we know those dots link up. And a committee won't do that. What's foolish in what I just laid out there as to how I think it'll work?
Not too much. I think you are mostly on line there. Just because what you're talking about, I think to connect the dots is a really good way to put the NCAA's case. Basically, just to say, you know, Kansas a lot of times has been like, where's the proof here? Where's the proof? And I've talked to you before about how the NCAA operates in a little bit different manner because they're like a homeowners association. They don't, the burden of proof doesn't have to be there like in a court case. You know what I mean? So they've kind of been disagreeing on that for a long time now. But this case comes down to one key thing, one key argument that the two sides disagree over. I mean, if we want to just get it down to the brass tacks there, it's that the NCAA is saying, again, to connect these dots that you just talked about, friend, to say, hey, you know, the NCAA is basically saying, we read these wiretaps, we read these phone conversations, we know what's going on here, we understand, even if it doesn't draw a straight line, we can connect these dots. But to do that in a notice of allegations, they had to make the claim that TJ Gasnola and Adidas representatives were boosters for the University of Kansas. That's the crux of this whole case right now, because either you say that the NCAA can do that and it potentially opens up a little bit of a Pandora's box in the rest of the NCAA, or you say, no, that's never been the case before, and that's not something that should be the case now, and that's obviously where Kansas's legal standing is with this right now. So I agree with you that people in the legal profession are much more likely to give this thought, an additional thought, compared to the Committee on Infractions, which, to put it in a pretty simple term, a lot of times they're just sort of rubber stamping what the NCAA enforcement staff has already uncovered and found out. And if that was the case with Kansas, there would be very severe violations. So, we can talk a lot of different ways. You talked about precedent. The IARP actually doesn't have to rely on precedent. They're kind of their own entity here. I'm not saying that they won't rely on that, because, again, in legal matters, a lot of times that is what happens. But they are free to kind of do their own thing, if you will. However, all those people have been trained in NCAA bylaws. So they've gone to summer sessions and workshops, and they've learned NCAA rules. So they also can't come out and be like, we don't like this rule at the NCAA. We think that this rule is dumb, and we think that Kansas is in the right here, so we're going to just strike this rule from the rule book. They're not able to do that either. They're supposed to operate within the rule book that is there. So, again, you can kind of talk your way to both sides of this, which is sort of why I know it's a little bit of a cop-out, but we keep saying that this is a new process, and we're not exactly sure where it's going to go. It's because of all those things I just mentioned. I mean, for every thing you say, well, that's kind of a good point for Kansas, you can kind of go back and say, well, that's right, not a good point for Kansas. And so we sort of are in that boat where we're waiting to see exactly how one of these cases plays out.
If you're a Kansas fan and you're like head spinning, I would say, listen, I definitely think this is a better possible situation. Like I would choose this door if I were Kansas. I like my odds much better here. I think you had no shot with the NCAA. I think you've got a shot here, and I think a pretty good one. But do you agree with me? They're not going to get away scot-free. And like I said, lawyers look to precedent, but they also know they're setting precedent. And if they take this case, and they know that how the law works, and rules are like, junior laws, for lack of a better term, they know that there's always a scenario that comes up that has not been accounted for previous. That's why laws get rewritten and tweaked, or new laws get written. And I don't think they're going to want to box themselves in by giving Kansas nothing, right? That's why I definitely don't think there's a way that they come away from this with nothing. Because if they would do that, it means everybody to the left of Kansas gets nothing, right? And I think they'll want to leave themselves some wiggle room, leave other committees, panels, wiggle room to be able to hand down a punishment. I just don't think right out of the gates they're going to go 0 or 100. But I think the NCAA was going to go 100 on the penalty. Like when I see what Oklahoma State got, I think Kansas was going to get their ass kicked with the penalty that was going to come down. And so now I think they might get somewhere in the 40 to 60 range of whatever the penalty is, if we can try to quantify it mathematically. That's where I think it will be. Based on how they do this, because I'm with you. There isn't a precedent to work from, but they are going to set a precedent, and they'll be very, very much aware of that fact, that's going to be there. Do you know, here's my question, when this comes down, Kansas can still turn around and sue, right? They could still file a lawsuit against this, against whatever judgment comes their way. That avenue is still open to Kansas, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. And then I mentioned that previous letter that KU sent to the NCAA in regards to whether they wanted this in the new independent process or not. And that was one of the lines in there, basically, to say that KU basically didn't agree with the fact that it can't appeal in the NCAA, but they were still keeping themselves open for taking this to a federal court or taking this to a different jurisdiction if they did not agree with the ruling. So, yes, that's available. And then obviously the news came out about a week ago that Bill Self's attorney was at least laying the groundwork with the NCAA to say that Bill Self potentially could pursue legal action against the NCAA if the ruling doesn't go as planned. So, I've talked about this before, but those types of measures, while they can sound good in headlines, those are the things that Kansas and Bill Self don't want to get to. I mean, that's the thing that takes years and takes legal money and takes a long time to hash out. So for Kansas, for the NCAA, both sides, which have a lot to lose in this, the best scenario possible is to have some sort of punishment that one side gives and feels comfortable with and the other side accepts and moves on from, because otherwise, getting this thing tied up in the courts and having all these threats and having this thing continue to drag on for years and years and years. I don't think that's really something either side wants to sign up for at this point in time.
Yeah, and the Self lawsuit, I'll come back to one other thing on the precedent in a second, but the Bill Self lawsuit, do you think that goes? Do you have you heard any inkling that whether or not that's going to go one way or the other? Or is it just he's getting all his ducks in order in case he doesn't like what the decision is, and then he'll sue? Is he hell-bent it's going to happen no matter what, or is it a wait and see right now?
Yeah, it's a good question. So if you look, what's sort of interesting about this, so Scott Thompson, who is Bill Self's attorney who sent this letter to the NCAA, I've been doing some research about this, and a name that should sound familiar to people in the Kansas City area, Todd McNair, he's gone through something similar. He was the old USC running backs coach through the whole Reggie Bush thing, and he ended up suing the NCAA in a very similar manner, and one of his first attorneys at the time happened to be Scott Thompson. So this is sort of interesting this played out. Now, what's interesting about that case is it started in 2011. It had to go through a bunch of basically hoops to jump through to make sure that it wasn't a frivolous lawsuit, and it made it through all those. It got to a jury, and finally in 2017, the jury found in favor of the NCAA. But you're talking about a seven-year process. It probably wouldn't be that long for Bill Self, but it just kind of speaks to, again, that how long that this sort of thing would take. And not only that, they just recently found that a jury member previously had worked with the NCAA in a business transaction, so that case is actually going to be reopened back up and tried again. So you're talking about 2011 to 2020, and this thing is still going to be pending. So once again, I think for Bill Self and his attorney, Scott Thompson, it's laying the groundwork. It's basically saying, hey, NCAA, if you didn't believe before, this is serious. You know what I mean? Like this is not – this is not a joke, a fake out. This is something that definitely could happen. But like I said before, if all things go correctly, Bill Self will never have to pursue that, because that is a worst-case scenario, basically.
Right.
That is, oh, my gosh, everything went wrong, and so now your only way to try to get something back is to take this into a somewhat lengthy legal battle. So, yeah, again, it's laying the groundwork. It's doing what you have to do in the meantime and trying to keep that avenue open. But if things go right for Bill Self with this, that's a course of action he'll never have to take.
And we presume that he would be able to file, I don't know if it would be a stay or an injunction of against any penalties that he was given. And so theoretically those penalties would be tied up and sitting out there looming over the horizon while that lawsuit was played out would be my assumption. Last question, just real quick. Gasnolo as a booster, we both cover sports. That seems like I actually agree with Kansas on this. Labeling, if you label him a booster, the whole system crumbles, right? And for that reason, I'd be shocked if they would actually, if that's what it all comes down to, and where I might be totally wrong is they go, no way that guy's a booster. Therefore, anything he did, we have no proof that Kansas paid anybody. Anything that Adidas did, they cannot be labeled a booster, or every program's got to be put on probation. Do you lean that way as well, that lawyer-like minds would never label Gasnolo and Adidas boosters?
Well, again, that's the question. I've been trying to, read as much about lawyering as I can lately, but that really is the crux of the issue. And I think with that, what's sort of interesting, when it comes to Gasnolo is, again, what we talked about, the NCAA is sort of saying you can connect the dots here. And obviously, Gasnolo said in his testimony that he did all that he did without the knowledge of KU coaches. I think the NCAA would come back and be like, come on, really, that didn't happen. Just look at everything else that happened with this. And again, trying to connect dots. But again, if it just comes down to that black and white statement that TJ Gasnolo is considered a booster and all these shoe company, apparel company people can be considered boosters of other universities, like I said before, you could be opening up Pandora's box and potentially be changing the NCAA and all these schools as you know them. So there's a lot of unintended consequences that could be coming because of that. So it's definitely a complex question to try to answer.
All right, Final Four time for Jesse Newell, the Kansas City Star. Four quickies. I will start you with this. Will you watch on Saturday the Nathan's Hot Dog Eating Contest?
Maybe. Sometimes I'm flipping through and get to it. But, maybe. There's at least a chance.
Maybe you're an American then. Maybe. Okay. What a slice
of America.
Is Chestnut
still up top? Is he still the best?
Joey Chestnut. He's the defending champion. He's won 11 of 12 or something like that. So,
well, that lets you know I've watched it before. Yeah,
absolutely. Absolutely. All right. What kind of dog do you prefer? Are you a straight hot dog guy? Are you a kielbasa, a Polish, Italian sausage? What do you like in the hot dog category?
Yeah, pretty much straight hot dog. Been a good quarantine meal, but I do pony up for the ballpark ones, you know, get the high quality.
Okay, very good. What do you like on your dog?
Used to be a lot more, but got a little bit low carb, heavier during this quarantine. So usually just mustard.
Just mustard. Oh, look at you. Low carb it is. No bun either, right?
No bun either. That's right.
Yeah. Okay. And then finally, if there was a hot dog eating contest and you had 10 minutes, you could eat how many dogs?
Five.
Five? That's awful. That is awful. You got to work at it, man. Jesse, you gotta invest yourself. You gotta be able to do more than five dogs. Jesse, great stuff as always, buddy. Really appreciate it. Keep up the great work, and we'll talk to you again soon.
All right, I'll keep the eating training going on. I'll do that for you.
There you go. There you go. Absolutely. Jesse Newell from the Kansas City Star always does a great job. We always appreciate him giving us some of his time, as he is always very generous with it. He's brought to you by our friends at Hen House, where you can go get said dogs and buns, or, of course, the burgers, or maybe it's some ribs. They're on special back at the meat counter. The delicatessen's got the whole meal for you if you want, including those Tippins pies. Great way to finish the 4th of July meal. It's at your neighborhood Hen House, your market for 97 years. When we come back, Stump the Chumps, great Cajun food from Jazz.
It's the Jazz End of the Hour Question on the Half Show. Sponsored by Jazz, a Louisiana kitchen.
Laissez le bon temps rouler.
Right on this date in 1987, this Royals outfielder hit his first home run in 5 years in the majors. Who is he? Brought to you by Jazz, a Louisiana kitchen.